You're listening to Exploring Boys Education, a regular podcast produced by IBSC for leaders and educators in boys' schools. Welcome to our 2025 Highlight Reel, a special podcast bringing together the most profound insights from a year of conversations and PD programs with leading educators and experts from around the globe. I'm your host, Bruce Collins. Our schools are at a critical juncture. As IBSC Executive Director Tom Batty reminds us, the world is changing rapidly, forcing us to re-examine the very nature of how and why we educate.
The way in which we share information is changing at pace. And this is changing the world, and it's changing us individually and societally. And it's challenging how and why we educate. It's not the first time this happens. Whenever we've changed the way we share information, societies tend to shudder, but the pace is something new.
In his IBSC Insights Address, Tom Batty framed this challenge through four key areas. He spoke of care and the online world, the complexities of working with technology, the vital importance of the end product, which he defines as creating a culture of agreeable disagreements, and finally, how we use the precious time and space we have with boys in our schools. Our highlight journey begins where all learning for boys truly starts, the undeniable power of human connection. Time and time again, our conversations return to one central truth. Boys are relational learners. Esteemed psychologist Dr. Michael Reichert, whose research has been foundational for the IBSC, explains this phenomenon, which he first discovered by listening to boys themselves.
When we asked the question, what's working, we included in the survey that we designed for the boys, we included instructions, you know, please don't name names or give away identifying details. Please, you know, maintain the anonymity of the people that you're talking about. But the boys completely ignored that instruction, described their teachers in very, very particular and robust detail, describing their moods, their pedagogy, their personal lives. And we realized in that moment that while teachers spent lots of time, lots of detail describing the technical basis for their lessons, for boys, the details were really about the person of the teacher, and that we were being led to an insight about what mattered to boys, which was essentially that boys are relational learners.
This isn't just theory. Educators see it every day. As Deborah Barker, principal of St. Kevin's College, notes, it's a simple but profound truth.
I think relationships is absolutely key. And I think it's, you know, we often know, don't we, that you learn your teachers first before you learn the subject.
The relationship between boy and teacher is a working alliance, a partnership built on trust and a shared goal. As Peter Kudis from Hale School and coordinator of the IBSC Relational Learning Special Interest Group reflects.
In a nutshell, that's it for me. For boys, the quality of that relationship they have with each teacher is the most important factor in determining their outcomes. More important, I'd say, than the quality of the curriculum, the quality of the teacher, delivery, all of which are important, of course, and also more important than which school the boy attends. Ultimately, when boys know that we are interested in them as individuals, that we care about them as people, and that we are willing as teachers to share our own interests, passions, and stories with them, then they want to learn, they want to give their best, and they really want to work for us in and out of the classroom.
Sandra Boyers from Crescent School, Peter's fellow coordinator of the Special Interest Group, adds that this connection is especially crucial because of the inherent vulnerability boys carry.
If you work with boys, particularly in a school that starts with the younger years, we forget how vulnerable boys are. And I really think this is a key point for those who work with boys, that they really do need to feel that trust. They are emotional, especially as young ones. And actually, they're emotional all the way through. What they choose to reveal to us as adults really depends on that trusted teacher-student relationship component. Because we hold that responsibility, that authority, we can't forget that we have to earn their trust along the way.
Boys assess this relationship based on very specific qualities. Dr. Reichert's research found that boys are first and foremost looking for a trustworthy guide.
When we asked the boys in the study, you know, what were the qualities or the features that made them willing to have these relationships with these teachers? Number one was the mastery and the high standards of the teacher. Boys wanted a reliable guide. And first on the list of qualities that they told us were important to them was this one, a teacher that was not only a master of his subject or her subject, but master of pedagogy as well.
Building these relationships requires specific intentional actions, or relational gestures, as the research calls them. It can be as simple as learning a boy's name or showing up to his game. But sometimes it's about navigating difficult moments. It falls to the teacher to be the manager of that relationship, especially when it breaks down.
We heard stories of boys having bad relationships who decided that that whole subject was something that they didn't care much about. We asked the boys, you know, why did the relationship break down? And we heard a range of explanations. Generally speaking, the boys were pointing their finger at the teachers and saying, it's because of them. Well, what we realized was that in this relational dynamic that can sometimes break down, that it falls to the teacher to be the manager of that relationship and to be the one that notices whether or not the boy is fully engaged, doing his best on a positive trajectory. And if that boy is not, if the connection is not sufficient or strong enough to motivate the boy, the teacher is responsible for doubling down, trying to strengthen or repair a relational breakdown.
This profound connection is the bedrock. It creates the safety needed for boys to tackle the complexities of their inner world, to build resilience, and to explore what it means to be a good man today. The modern world presents boys with a dizzying array of messages about masculinity. At an IBSC event on well-being, David Bott from the Wellbeing Distillery framed the scale of the challenge by outlining five key issues facing boys' schools today.
Here's number one, the rising mental health challenges of anxiety, suicide, depression, particularly in boys. Look, in all boys' schools around the world, we see these rising levels of challenge, of anxiety, particularly, and depression, which kind of links to this number two, which is stigma and masculinity norms limiting emotional expression. So we have that challenge as well. So we've got rising mental health challenges, stigma and masculinity norms limiting emotional expression. Number three, bullying and peer relationship challenges. Number four, we've got digital media and online pressures. And finally, we have academic pressure and disengagement.
At the heart of helping boys navigate these challenges is building their resilience and emotional intelligence. For author and professor Andrew Reiner, this starts with redefining strength.
Helping boys understand that there is a courage and a wisdom in knowing when to ask for help. Because this idea of taking it all on yourself does not make boys stronger. It does not build their resiliency. It just does the opposite, and it erodes it.
This journey towards resilience is both internal and external. It's about creating spaces where boys can develop self-awareness and regulate their own stress. Tracy McKenzie, Director of Wellbeing at St. Andrew's College in South Africa, has seen the profound impact of a simple, accessible tool, the breath.
So much of what I'm trying to do is actually, it's not about the programs, it's about self-awareness. You know, it's about noticing, because before anybody else can see things, if you're in tune, you can notice it for yourself first. And for me, that's super important.
For Tracy, breathwork is powerful, accessible, and cost-free. It's a method to give boys agency over their emotional state.
It's so powerful when someone can go, do you know what, I'm feeling X in this moment. Hey, I've got some tools, and I can help myself. For me, that's just that's what it's all about.
This self-awareness allows boys to move beyond the narrow, often stoic expectations of traditional masculinity. It empowers them to embrace vulnerability and view failure not as a judgment on their worth, but as a vital part of learning.
We want to normalize failure for boys because it is verboten. And I'll give you one really quick, simple example. You know, when there are co-ed classrooms, girls are far more likely to take part in conversations because they understand the importance of what I call healthy risk-taking. And you are far less likely to see the boys raising their hands. And that is an example right there. And we want to encourage boys. They need to be taught this because there's no place that they're learning it.
Creating this culture of healthy masculinity and belonging requires an intentional curriculum and a deep understanding of diversity. Katie Mtetwa, founder of Thrive Together, emphasizes that this work is not just about what we do, but who we are.
It's not about what you do, it's about who you be. And maybe it's a bit of both. What you do and who you be. There are actions, there are things that we can do to be more inclusive, but I really believe that it's about being on a journey of becoming more inclusive so that we create a genuine context for people to feel that they belong.
This journey of becoming is guided and shaped by the most important people in our schools, our educators. The culture of a school is its heartbeat, and middle leaders, as Hal Hannaford, a veteran school head, describes them, are the engine room. They translate vision into action and are pivotal in shaping the day-to-day experience of boys and colleagues.
The power of a school is simply this. I truly believe, and I think it's a good discussion point, that any initiatives that if they are to be sustained in a school, they are bottom-up led. They come from the bottom and then ultimately get supported. And every time you move into a middle leadership, you now have an opportunity to actually lead from a little bit below and actually really engage and make some significant changes to a particular school.
To build a thriving culture, Justin Robinson of the Wellbeing Distillery argues that schools need a clear plan where leaders, educators, and students all have defined roles. For educators of boys, the key function is to embed well-being into their daily work.
I think the main role for every educator isn't necessarily teaching explicit well-being. But certainly the main role of every educator, the main function that we hope and every educator can do is to integrate well-being practices into their daily life. For the benefit of themselves, and of course, for the benefit of the community, for the benefit of their students. But can they integrate evidence-informed well-being practices that support connection in the classroom, that support students to take risks and to have brave conversations in a classroom, that nurture a sense of growth and feedback and a growth mindset?
This leadership is not just managerial, it's inspirational. It's about modelling the very behaviours we hope to instil in our boys. Within this culture, women educators play a unique and vital role, as Dudu Mashele from St. John's College puts it, quoting Tom Batty.
We bring those soft hands that don't move. You know, we are gentle. We are empathetic, you know, and we listen. We're good listeners, you know, in this space. But we hold boys accountable, you know, at the same time. You know, they know that us as teachers, as women teachers, we are the spine of the education in our schools. We will always, always hold them accountable to handing in work on time, handing in neat work, you know, right within the lines, you know, look at the margin, all of that, you know. So that saying for me, the soft hands that don't move, I think it's really from us, the women in the space that teach the boys.
Carla Boniolo from Westlake Boys High School agrees.
And I think what I'd add to that is that as female teachers, we've got a really unique capacity to show love to the boys who we teach, who we coach, who are in our form classes. And I think that that's something I know I've heard Susan Hassell, esteemed headmaster of Hamilton Boys High School in New Zealand, she talks a lot about the power that comes from teaching based on love and having that as the foundation. And I think that as female educators, we're really uniquely placed to show our boys that love. And like you said, that kind of that gentle, nurturing energy, whilst also having boundaries and holding boys accountable. But I think that that's a really unique part of teaching as a female in an all-boys environment.
Creating an effective learning environment also requires a specific skill set. Mark Dowley from Brighton Grammar School explains that when we talk about disruptive classrooms today, we're often not talking about overt aggression. Instead, citing a research think tank from Australia, he says the challenge is what they call passive disengagement.
It's less abusing the teacher, it's less punching each other, throwing chairs out the windows, but it's a lot more of this really frustrating stuff. Avoiding work. So you say get started and the students don't. It's you're asking them to pay attention, but they're staring out the window. Class starts at 9, but they're arriving at 9:05 and they don't have a pen or they don't have the book that you want them to have. Or sometimes you just want them to work and they're talking instead of working.
Dali's solution to this passive disengagement is to be direct and intentional, arguing that behaviour itself is a curriculum that must be taught explicitly.
The best classroom managers often think that behaviour can be viewed as a curriculum that needs to be taught and practice. You know, when I went through teacher training, I thought my role was to teach students mathematics, or I'm also a PE teacher, so I used to teach them football. Right? But you know, the best behaviour managers actually go, we need to teach behaviour now. We actually need to teach students how to enter a room. We need to teach students how to pay attention. And we need to explicitly teach those skills and practice them because they're not coming to class with those skills.
Attracting and retaining educators who can build this culture is a primary focus for school leaders. Lester Lala, head of St John's Boys Prep in Johannesburg, shares his perspective.
There are very few of those just real incredible schoolmasters coming through. And so I think the need to grow one's own timber is really important. We've now spent a lot more time on our recruitment process to ensure that we find the right people.
This proactive approach to culture and behaviour is more crucial than ever as educators help boys navigate a world dominated by unprecedented digital challenges. From gaming addiction to online radicalisation, the digital world presents a minefield of risks. In the Netflix series, Adolescence, we see a stark portrayal of how boys' loneliness and insecurity can be exploited online. John Boddy, head of school at the Browning School, reflects on the immediacy of this threat.
One of the scariest elements of the miniseries, Bruce, for me, is that the most dangerous things can seem to happen while your son hasn't left his room. So what's really challenging about this moment is that there's this often like dangerous like hidden apparatus that's been built to take advantage of adolescent weakness and insecurity and uncertainty. And you know, virtually every teenager is going to feel lost at some point, you know, even if only for a moment. And so the danger can feel like pretty ambient, right? Like even the so-called you know, quote unquote best boys, they could slip into a place that we don't recognize, and they can do so unnoticed, and that may not be likely. But it's our worry, and I think that's what gives such immediacy and such importance to this conversation. I was grateful for the prompt that the series offered.
Tom Batty refers to this as looking for distress where the light is dim, because boys' distress can manifest in darker online corners.
We look for things where we shine the light. And as Lisa Damore, a clinical psychologist from the United States, notes, we tend to spend our energy on phenomena for which we have a well-established research literature. And this tends to be, when we're looking at distress in children, we look at depression, anxiety, anorexia, bulimia, self-harm, problematic social media use. And all of these, as Lisa notes, occur more frequently with girls than they do with boys, which isn't to say they don't occur with boys. They do, but they're more frequent with girls. And we're not as inclined to search where we don't shine the light. It's not what we do. And these are the areas such as exposure to violent pornography, problematic gaming, compulsive online gambling, which tell us more about the distress being felt by adolescent boys.
Another rapidly growing digital threat is online gambling and sports betting, which has become deeply embedded in boy culture. Saul Malek, who speaks to schools about his personal experience with gambling addiction, highlights its prevalence.
2023, I believe it was, the National Council on Problem Gambling did a survey, and they said between 60 and 80% of high schoolers had gambled in the past year, just in some capacity. When you talk about boys specifically, I think the sports betting is what really stands out to me as being the primary focus, the primary target that a lot of these young men are participating in. But when you ask what challenges schools have in addressing it, my first thought is just how culturally embedded this seems to be in boys' circles. And so when you try to get young men to stop or at least control the behavior, I believe you really have to penetrate the whole framework of these social groups, because it's become trendy and cool to be a degenerate gambler.
Beyond ideology and addiction, technology is physically changing our boys' brains. With her background in neuroscience, Catherine Burkett explains the addictive pull of tech, which is amplified during puberty.
So the dopamine, and it's heaps more than just dopamine, but dopamine's the primary neurotransmitter we're talking about. So that gets more sensitive. So every buzz they get, they've got a significantly increased desire to chase that buzz again. And being really simplistic, what happens when the dopamine buzz is pinging off, the part of our brain up the top that's about our brake system, should I or shouldn't I, that hasn't got any energy going to it. So when we scan an adolescent's brain, they are pushing for that reward. They're seeking that buzz, and they don't have the capacity to activate the part of the brain that says, should I or shouldn't I?
While the risks are significant, technology also presents an incredible opportunity. Dina Foster from Educate Ventures Research uses a powerful metaphor of a stallion for harnessing artificial intelligence.
This is my AI stallion. It sums up everything. It is powerful. It's strong. It can do some heavy lifting for you. If you can direct that stallion, that horse, to work for you, then fantastic. What an advantage. If that stallion can carry your learners along faster, better, more efficiently, you know, really having an impact, you can see the strength and the power to do good there. But at the same time, you would never let that run through your classroom or through your playground or your dining hall unchecked, unfettered. And so it's really about harnessing, literally harnessing this horse to be able to drive it to achieve your aims, but also allow yourselves to pull back on the reins and achieve this balance between the potential for AI and exploiting that in the classroom, in with learners, but also balancing out, mitigating those threats.
The challenges are clear, but so are the opportunities. In our final highlight, we turn to the core mission of schools, to engage boys in learning. How do we capture a boy's attention and spark a lifelong love of learning? It begins with understanding his world. For our youngest learners, this means embracing the power of play. Janine Harvey from St. John's Educational Trust in Zimbabwe describes their child-centered philosophy.
I think with play learning, you know, with learning through play, you're also gauging what the boys are interested in and what they want to do. And you can have a grand plan for your lesson. It can completely be sidelined by a boy who wants to share a story, and then you decide to go with that story, you know. And it's about being flexible and adapting to what the child is interested in. And I think that's where the child-centered philosophy comes in.
The St. John's approach fosters deeper, more authentic assessment.
What possible way is better to measure a child's success than when he's actually really giving it his best shot? For us, yeah, sometimes, okay, let's be honest, sometimes the difficulty comes in when you've got complex behaviors and processing skills and things like that. But a good teacher will be able to observe what's going on and then carefully intervene and be able to direct or elicit what they can and can't do through her questioning, through her language, through her observation.
As boys get older, engaging them in reading becomes a key focus. The IBSC Reading Culture Special Interest Group found that a boy's relationship with reading is deeply personal and social. Carolyn Friedlander of Woodbury Forest School in the United States notes the power of role models.
From one of the questions that we asked was about social spheres and spheres of influence. And in that survey, we realized that boys are actually really influenced by the people in their lives, meaning that when people recommend books to them that are in their spheres of influence, they take that to heart. So the survey results actually showed us that family members were the biggest influence in their reading collection, followed by teachers and friends and coaches. And this shows us that boys really do want to know what their role models and friends are reading, and that they're much more likely to read a book that's been recommended by someone that they trust and that they look up to.
It's also about meeting boys where they are. Amaryllis Barton from King Edward VI School in the UK found that changing the mode of reading using ebooks or graphic novels can be a game changer for reluctant readers.
So I'm not saying that we should abandon paperbacks and bring in an entirely new diet of screen reading and graphic novels. I actually think it's all a virtuous cycle, and I think that, and that's also backed up by lots of research as well, and you know, lots of pieces of these reveal that too. But basically what this has made us realise, I think particularly me as an English teacher, with my probably prejudices about what is best in terms of how boys should read, is that good reading strategy is about finding the right, it's not just about finding the right book for the right boy, it's about finding the right book in the right mode for the right boy.
From the power of a teacher's relationship to the complexities of the digital age, the journey of educating boys is one of constant learning, adaptation, and profound purpose. It's a journey of connection, of nurturing resilience, of building cultures where every boy can feel known, valued, and empowered to become his best self. As we've heard today, the challenges are real, but the hope and opportunity are even greater. As Rick Parsons, head of school at the Stirling Hall School in Canada, passionately states,
one of the things that's really exciting is the last few years of the new knowledge that is coming out. I mean, Richard Reeves has kind of put some of these conversations and issues on the map. We've got Niobe Way had a new book last year. You know, we've got Lisa DeMore is not just working with girls anymore. She's talking about boys. There's a huge movement. Andrew Reiner's work. And the fact that the IBSC is creating this global forum for these conversations, the appetite for people to even be here today to be talking about it, I think there's a huge interest and it's engaging and it's inspiring to know that there's more information that's helping guide us and there's more people coming together with the same kind of will and excitement and energy and enthusiasm to make the world a better place for the boys.
And concluding with encouragement to educators of boys everywhere, John Boddy from the Browning School in New York City highlights that.
Those of us who are lucky enough to be in boys' schools, I think we have a real advantage in all of this. Because all gender schools can certainly give great care and attention to boys, but boys' schools, like we are set up as these huge affinity groups, right? To borrow language from elsewhere. Like we can be explicit and intentional and direct, not just about what to avoid, right? But what our vision for positive living, positive masculinities are. Right, like our vision for the kind of flourishing that comes when boyhood is connected, when it's allowed to express and embody like a full range of human virtues and activities, from things that show strength and independence and courage, but also compassion and cooperation and openness, like the whole gamut. I think we can offer this countercultural narrative, this healthy narrative about the various ways that boys can thrive and the kinds of relationships and practical skills and emotional wellness that it all depends on. You know, like we know what makes a healthy boy. We have some ideas about what makes a flourishing life, and we know what kind of environments make this most likely. So I think we're more than enough as a coalition, as individual schools, and as individual practitioners, both content and discipline experts, but also relational experts and people here to love boys. Like if we give them the needed attention and resources and patience and love to guarantee those environments in schools, I think that's a really healthy answer to a challenge that's pretty immediate.
Thank you for joining us on this IBSC highlight reel. Let's continue to champion boys' education, to foster connection, and to believe always in the boundless potential of the boys in our care. Until next time, keep on championing boys' education.